From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Oh, you are great. You are great. It is great to be back in Seattle. Seattle, Washington, it may be, with apologies to Berkeley, California, and certain communes in Vermont, the perfect public radio town. Drew, what have you got? You've got, of course, excellent coffee. You've got dozens of bookstores, concert venues. It's so environmentally correct in Seattle, the funeral homes all put the bodies in composting bins. Even the drug dealers down in Steinbrook Park, they claim to be 100% organic. They're like, oh, it's shade grow, man. It's fair trade. It's like paradise here. So there's this odd disorientation for public radio people who come to Seattle. Did the plane land or did it crash? Well, if you can hear me, you can be pretty sure we made it here safely this time. So give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Adam Stillwagon calling from Camarillo, California.
Camarillo, California?
Yes, sir.
Now, where's Camarillo?
Camarillo is about 45 minutes south of Santa Barbara.
Right. So
Camarillo is the home of one of the biggest prisons in California.
Well, formerly.
Really?
We used to have the biggest state hospital, and now it's a college.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So the prison became a hospital, became a college?
Yeah, it's like the makings of a horror movie right there.
It really is.
Hey,
you know
what?
It's a riot. Everybody needs help. And then they realize maybe I should change my course in life.
Adam, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, it's a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher and the author of Schrodinger's Ball. Mr. Adam Felber is right here.
Hi, Adam.
Next, a comedian who will be appearing at the Wadsworth Theater in Los Angeles Saturday, July 12th, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Adam.
And lastly, say hello to a comedian and writer, Mr. Paul Prevenza.
Hello, Adam Stillwagon. It's always a pleasure to meet another Camarillo inmate.
Adam, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain two of them. If you do that, you'll win our prize. Now into its second decade, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I would be honored.
All right. Here's your first quote.
When I bag my first Washington, D.C. deer, I will send a shoulder of venison to Justice Scalia in grateful admiration.
That was Rosa Brooks, a legal analyst for Slate.com, applauding, perhaps insincerely, a landmark Supreme Court decision that declared it really is a constitutional right to do what?
To own a handgun.
Yes, it is. And aren't we glad for that? Amazingly, the Supreme Court has never ruled on what the Second Amendment really means until this week. In overturning Washington, D.C.'s ban on handguns, a five-justice majority said it means that we Americans have the right to pack heat, subject to reasonable regulation. So sorry, Sean Hannity, you'll lose the deposit on the rocket launcher. The opinion by Justice Scalia was strongly worded. It called the opposing arguments for the ban, quote, frivolous and bizarre.
Bang.
Bang. But Justice Stevens read his dissent aloud from the bench, which is the Supreme Court equivalent of giving the finger. So things got heated, and in response, Justice Thomas, he went up to the bench. He's even more conservative than Scalia. He read aloud a concurring opinion, which began, I know what you're thinking, punk. Did I fire five bullets or six?
The most words he's ever said on the bench.
Yes, exactly.
Wouldn't that be, was the vote 5-4? 4-5?
Well, in all the arguments, I kind of lost track. So the question is, counselor, do you feel lucky?
Do you feel lucky?
This wasn't legally binding, but he did recommend that American citizens now try to cross the street in a serpentine fashion, he said.
They're going to have to repaint all those crosswalks.
Yes, I know.
When they wrote the Constitution, was it possible at that time to have a gun hidden?
Well,
Well, the muskets were larger.
Yeah.
But they did have expansive pantaloons.
Yeah. There were a lot of faux hunchbacks roaming the countryside.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I would think that you never had anybody draw on you quickly.
It takes about a minute to reload.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
Okay, Adam, back to you. Here is your next quote.
Vero possemus.
Now, those two Latin words were emblazoned on a seal that looked a lot like the seal of the President of the United States. Someone got a little bit of guff for putting it on his lectern last week, perhaps prematurely. Who?
Would that have been John McCain?
No, it would not have been. I you may have reduced the possibilities now.
Well, the only other person I could think of would be Barack Obama.
That would be him, Barack Obama.
Saddens me a little bit to hear that.
I know. I mean, it's, what? Can Barack Obama make such a boneheaded mistake? Yes, he can. The seal in front of his lectern at the speech in Chicago looked a lot like the real one. It had the eagle clutching the arrows in one claw, the olive branch in the other. But instead of the Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, the Obama seal read, Vero possemus, which we thought meant, oh, voting me into office would be so redundant now. Realizing it seemed a bit premature, the Obama campaign quickly retired the seal. They sent the staffer who came up with it to canvass for votes on a small rocky outcropping in the middle of Lake Michigan. The campaign also said it would now reconsider the decision to have a Marine band follow the candidate around playing Hail to the Obama. They are dropping their demand that Obama have a seat on the UN Security Council, and they will stop referring to his infrequent trips to Burger King as dinners with a fellow head of state. Adam, here is your final quote.
Bleep, 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 mother bleeper, bleep, and bleep.
So those were the seven words you can't say on television, or, of course, radio. They were famously said quite often, unbleeped, by whom, who died this week at the age of 71.
A great loss, that was George Carlin.
It was. The comedian, considered one of the greatest and most influential stand-ups ever, was second only to Lenny Bruce in terms of the danger he posed to right-thinking people. He was once arrested in Milwaukee for obscenity, and he was the reason why the very first Saturday Night Live broadcast was not actually live. Since he was hosting, the network put his segments on a 6-second delay in case he said something naughty.
Oh, what a funny, different era it was when there was a 6-second delay. Oh.
You guys knew him, or at least some of you did, right, Paul?
Yes, he was truly a great man, not only a brilliant artist, but also a real supporter of young talent and the art form in general. He was great, and wow. He was a brilliant wordsmith. Do you know that his grandfather once wrote out the entire works of Shakespeare by hand just because he loved the language? Wow. And that's what Carlin inherited, and it's in all his work. He's
Shakespeare did that, too, in fairness.
Yeah, he did.
That's true. And first.
But... None of Shakespeare's grandchildren had 22 HBO specials.
Touché.
Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Adam, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
That is awesome.
Well done.